reading from Job chapter 29, verses 2 through 10. Oh that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and when his light I walked through the darkness. Just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were around me, when my steps were bathed with cream, and the rocks poured out rivers of oil for me. When I went out to the gate by the city, when I took my seat in the open square, the young men saw me and hid, and the aged rose and stood. The princes refrained from talking and put their hand on their mouth. The voice of nobles was hushed, and their tongues stuck to the roof of their mouth.
Thank you, Sean and Robert. Good morning. Robert looked at me like, is that all you want me to read? It goes on the rest of the chapter, but I thought we'd just stop at that point. But Job's talking about the good old days. And he had a reason to talk about the good old days, because when he was talking about it, they weren't so good. And that's kind of what brings that up from time to time. So we're glad you're here. We have a number of visitors in the audience today. We're thankful for your presence. Hopefully most of you have clear throats today. Kind of hard to find that this morning, but welcome to Kansas City. That's always that time of year. But we have some coming to school. We're thankful for you. There's some leaving. We'll keep them in our prayers. If there's others that are going to place membership here, going to college somewhere, let us know so we can get to know you better and help you out as well. If you'll open your Bibles to Job 29, we'll be looking at that a little bit, but I thought we'd preach a lesson entitled, If I Were 18. Interesting subject, isn't it? We all like to look back at our past lives, and the older you get, the more you like to do that from time to time, to see what changes we would have made if we could do it all over again. In this lesson, I'm sure the teenagers are thinking, boy, here's another one of those sermons. Because I remember being a teenager and didn't really care for that much. Like, what do these old folks know about being a teenager? But at the same time, I look back at this lesson and it's kind of self-evaluating. And a lot of the choices I made when I was 18, I would encourage you to make today. I wasn't your normal teenager. I was born an old man, I like to say. And if you understand what that means, you're probably that person too. But I grew up with a bunch of friends of mine who were normal teenagers. I raised three kids who were very normal teenagers. And I watch other people's children, and I watch from decade to decade and see how things turn out with the choices people make. And that's really what this lesson is all about. What choices should you make when you're 18? In our society, we're viewed as adults at 18. We can make our own decisions. And that really is the time when teenagers decide, okay, it's time to leave home, maybe go to college. And you go to college and think, okay, do I have to do what my mom and dad taught me to do? And the answer is no. You turn 18, you can pretty much do anything you want. You get to choose. But what this lesson is trying to remind you of is even though you have the right and the ability to choose and you can do anything you want, there's consequences to every single choice you make. If you think you can be 18 and sow your wild oats and have fun and enjoy life and nothing bad's going to happen, you're sadly mistaken. If you decide, I'm not going to go to church because my mom and dad made me, ask yourself, is that a wise decision? Is that why you want to not go to church, or is it because you don't want the structure and the strictness of religion? And be honest with yourself, because sometimes we deceive our own selves in making bad choices. And the excuses we give really are nothing more than excuses, and the choices are still bad because if we used our head and used logic, we wouldn't make some of those same decisions. So I can honestly say that when I was 18, I made a lot of choices that I would still make today, and I look back and I'm glad I made them when I did. I was 13 years old when I decided I wanted to be a gospel preacher. I don't think most 13-year-olds think that way. I thought they should, but apparently I was wrong. But you need to think about what you're going to be doing with life. You can't have a good time in worldly pleasures while you're young and think there's no consequences to it. As someone said, you can't sow your wild oats and then pray for a harvest failure. It'd be nice if it worked that way, but it doesn't. We want to give the best to the devil and then leave the leftovers of our life to God. And that's the wrong attitude to have altogether. When you're 18, your life is all in front of you. You do get to make your choices because you'll find at that age, nobody can make you do what you don't want to do. So that being the case, you've got a lot of power and a lot of choices and a lot of ability. But I'm encouraging you to use your head and make wise decisions, not foolish ones. Realize you sow wild oats, you're going to suffer for that the rest of your life in one way or another. It will come back to haunt you, and you'll look back when you're old and you'll wish you hadn't done that. But the good news is you can make the wise choices now, and in doing so, be very glad you did. Let me say this. We have some of the finest young people in the world in this congregation. And that's not an over-exaggeration. Because I talked to a lot of them, at least the ones that will talk to me. And they tell me very interesting things that are very subtle, and it tells me they're looking at their life and they're making wise choices, and the world isn't dictating to them what they're going to do or not do. They're trying to follow God's instructions. And I would call out several names and illustrate it by the things they've done, but I don't want to embarrass them this morning, so you'd be interested too. But get to know the young people here if you don't. They're good people. And young people, if you're under 18, this is for you because you need to start thinking about that here pretty soon. Those who are going off to college shortly, this is time to think about it. And even as an older person, maybe a young married couple or even a couple that's older, you can look back and say, what adjustments do we need to make because we didn't make all these right choices? And then do yourself a favor, if you did make bad choices, help young people understand what some of the consequences are. They can't see as far down the road as maybe you can. So there's a warning, and that is there are many examples of young people who died suddenly who had in their mind that one day they're going to straighten up and serve the Lord, but they didn't get that opportunity. I can think of one real good example. I don't know if I mentioned it here or not, but when I lived in Morrilton, Arkansas, have I mentioned this before? Somebody shake or not, I don't have to tell it again, but it's a true story. 18-year-old man just graduated high school, didn't want to go to college, decided he was going to make a living working on the backhoe, which he did, and you could make good money doing that if you knew what you were doing. Unfortunately, that summer, he tipped that backhoe over and it trapped him. He was crushed from the waist down underneath that backhoe. Of course, they called the emergency crews and tried to get him some help. And as they were coming, he was telling everybody, leave me alone. Stop talking to me. I'm praying. They said, well, we want you to be calm and be patient. He said, no, I'm dying. He said, I know when they lift this backhoe off of me, I'm going to be dead. So I'm going to use my last moments in life to pray to God. Well, that's exactly what happened. And this was a typical 18-year-old kid who liked to go out and drink and party and have a good time. And I know these things are true because this was a fellow who was a friend of my brother David. 18 years old, thinks he has the whole world in front of him. A terrible accident happens and he dies. I lived in Searcy, Arkansas, and about a half a dozen kids from a denomination went out on a Friday night and were going to drink and party. And they got drunk and started driving down a road, which was right beside the river. And the drunk driver drove right off in the river, and they all drowned. You see, young people can make bad choices and as a result lose their life. Not everybody does. Some people make bad choices and are fortunate enough to be able to repent of those and to straighten their lives out. But we all need to realize there's no guarantee for tomorrow. And so we need to be aware of that. I remember the words of the Beatles song Yesterday. And I always thought when I first heard that that's a strange song for young people to be singing. But the words go, yesterday all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as if they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Kind of somber, isn't it, for a popular song like that? But that's what we're trying to tell you. Young people die drunk. Young people have babies out of wedlock. Young people die suddenly, unexpectedly. Some have premature marriages and make bad decisions that way. Some get involved in drugs and alcohol and spend the rest of their lives being a recovering addict. And so we reap what we sow. Isn't that what Paul said in Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8? He said, do not be deceived. What's the next words? The preacher's not mocked. The elder's not mocked. Mom and dad are not mocked. No, it says God is not mocked. So God's the one that set this law in order. Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. How hard is that to understand? You plant a watermelon seed, watermelon's coming up. Corn seed, corn comes up. You sow your wild oats as a young person, you're going to pay for that with the harvest that comes with it. And you're going to have to explain to everybody what that wild oats harvest is when you hid your sowing from them. So God says, whatever man sows, that shall also reap. Here's the problem with wild oats. In Paul's words, it's sowing to the flesh corruption. And that's what you reap, is corruption. Young people, you have a clear slate. For some degree, a clean mind. Not a lot of history that you have to get over. Not a bad choices that you have to overcome. And so make wise choices, make deliberate choices, think about what you do before you do them, even in the small decisions. And in doing that, you'll sow the kind of life that you'll be proud of and be proud to tell others about later. Another thing that we need to keep in mind are the words of Solomon, Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. And I'm all for that. I loved being a young person when I was young. I love watching young people today. I watch them having fun. I watch them being happy. I watch them being carefree. I watch them sometimes complain about mom and dad. That's okay. We all do that. One day you'll be mom and dad, and they'll be complaining about you. So enjoy your youth while you got it. But he goes on to say, walk in the ways of your heart in the sight of your eyes. You do what you want to do. You enjoy your youth. You enjoy the time you have. It will soon be over. Enjoy those things. But always remember that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. Go back to chapter 2, and Solomon tells you, I tried everything the world has to offer, and I can tell you what's good and what's bad. So you can either try it yourself and find out that he was right, or you can make the wise choice and follow the wisdom of Solomon and God. You know, youth and foolishness are not synonymous. You can be a young person. As I've already said, we have many fine young people here, and I'm not just trying to butter them up. I don't think we praise them enough. But there were some good young people in the New Testament as well. Timothy was one of those people. In 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15, he said, from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures. And now he's a young preacher. So he's made a lot of right choices. And we read about him in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12, when the Apostle Paul said, let no man despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and in conduct, in love, in spirit, and in purity. There are those choices you get to make. Timothy made the right choices. Joseph made the right choices. Daniel made the right choices. A lot of our young people are making the right choices here, and I'm thankful for that. And let me say this, that doesn't just happen by accident. Young people make choices on purpose. They have a plan. They don't always tell everybody what their plan is, but it's very obvious that they have a plan. And so we want to have a good plan, not a bad one. All right, well, number two, learn to rule self. That's the next ingredient to if I were 18 again. Self-control is an extremely difficult thing. But it can be accomplished with tremendous intent and purpose. You've got to realize that self-control is difficult. being difficult, you need to master it, because if you master that, then you have conquered most everything else we'll talk about this morning. Proverbs 16:32, for example, says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty." Some young people have a tremendous temper, and they have to learn to control that temper. And I've known some who did and did a very good job at it, so much so that by the time they were 30, 35 years old, people who knew that person said, "I can't believe you used to have a temper." And so they've learned to control that, but it took a lot of effort. And even once in a while with a temper like that, sometimes it comes back. But the Bible says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty." Why? Because he has controlled himself. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 27, the Apostle Paul said, "But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection." Paul, why do you have to discipline your body? Because self-control is a difficult thing. There are many things going on in our own lives that allow us to do wrong, because the devil's going to be there every step of the way to encourage us to make the wrong decisions. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 10 and 11, "He who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit." Think about that. Refrain from speaking deceit. You ever know kids who are good at that? I'll give you an example. Parent thinks the child's up to something he shouldn't be, and he says, "Billy, what are you doing?" And he says, "Oh, nothing." You know what that is? That's deceit. What that means is, I'm not going to tell you because I'd be ashamed of it if I did. I'd be in trouble if I told you. So sometimes we practice deceit very early in life. I know kids used to say, "Well, Mom and Dad, can I go over to Susie's house?" If they're a girl. So Mom lets the girl go over to Susie's house thinking there can't be anything wrong there. Well, turns out Susie and the girl go somewhere else. And so you got to think, okay, now they went there, but are they still there? Well, with iPhones, you can find out. But used to, you couldn't do that. But when you ask them, "What are you doing? What have you been up to?" "Oh, nothing." Sometimes they just want to talk about it, but sometimes we're hiding things. Refrain your your lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Who's he talking to there? Everybody. But especially when you start out in life, decide, "I'm not going to do evil. I'm going to do good." Why? Because God said so. Because it's right. Because I want to sow a good harvest. Because I want to enjoy life. It's really what it's all about. So you consciously turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. How do I seek peace? Well, don't be a troublemaker. Don't be one of those instigators. I know on the playground, we had bullies when I was a kid growing up, and they wouldn't fight. They'd try to get two other kids to fight. And then if they wouldn't fight, they'd stand there and say, "Well, one of you is scared and the other's glad of it. You two are a bunch of sissies. You're a couple of cowards. If you were real men, you'd fight." And so they're egging it on. They're always trying to cause trouble. And that's just a light illustration, but you know what I'm talking about. There's people like that. They're always trying to get other people to do wrong things. It's their form of entertainment. And the Bible says if you want to have a good life and live a long time, then you'll be a peacemaker and a peace seeker. Don't look for trouble. Look for peace and promote it. 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 6. Let me go back. I didn't put that on the passage up here. "Giving all diligence, add to your faith." Add to my faith what? Virtue, which is power, strength, moral rectitude. Add to your faith virtue, knowledge, self-control. So again, there it is. We have to learn to control ourselves. It's one thing to learn the Bible and know what it says. It's another thing to put it to practice. And so you need to do that. We all need to do that. Self-control is something you'll have to practice the rest of your life. Because just about the time you think you've got it made, that's when the devil gets you. "Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." And so that's how that works. But add these things to your life. You want to talk about a nice math program? Here's one for you. add your faith virtue, knowledge, self-control, godliness, things of that sort. That's what you need to do. Number two, along that same line, under self-control, learn to control your thoughts, because that's where it all begins. Look at what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 15 and verse 19, for out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts. If you have a good heart, you'll have good thoughts. If you have a bad heart, you'll have bad thoughts. And so the devil knows as a young person, you're a good person, you have a good heart. You're naive to some degree, and you're intending to have good ideals at this young stage in life. You want to do right. So the devil's going to try to change that for you and get you to start thinking bad thoughts. Knowing that if he can get you to meditate on bad things, pretty soon he'll get you to do those things you've been thinking about. And so I like to say, get rid of that stinking thinking. And a good example of that is Eve in the Garden of Eden. She's just doing fine, enjoying life. She understands the rule. We cannot eat of the tree in the midst of the garden, lest we die. But then Satan comes along, and there's that instigator, that troublemaker, that non-peace pursuer, and he says, you shall not surely die. God knows you're missing out on all the fun. Eve, don't you want to have fun? You don't be a square, do you? Who told you you couldn't do that? Who said it wasn't going to be good for you? So she gets to thinking about it. She looks at the food and says, it does look like it'd be something good to eat. And the devil said, it'd make me wise, and I certainly want to be wise. And so she partook of it. Evil thoughts lead to bad actions. Again, Romans 12:2 says, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed. How? By the renewing of your mind. Renewing your mind is the process of getting selfish thinking out of your head and getting spiritual thinking in your head. Stop thinking like yourself and think like God wants you to think. Stop thinking about bad things. Start thinking about good things. It's a transformation process. And if you ever noticed what was said in Luke chapter 2 to Mary when she was told that she's going to be the mother of Jesus? Well, a lot of things she was told, but I want you to notice one thing in particular. In Luke 2 and verse 35, the Lord said to her, yes, a sword will pierce through your own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. How is Jesus Christ coming to the earth going to do that? Her heart's going to be pierced through because she's going to watch her son die on the cross. But his actions are going to convict a lot of people in the world of sin, of righteousness, and of judgment to come. Because the gospel is that message that separates the good from the bad, those who want to do right from those who don't. And he says it this way, the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed. And that's what Hebrews 4:12 says. The word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even dividing asunder of soul and spirit and joint and the marrow, and is the thought, is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the what? Heart. No wonder some people don't want to go to church and hear a sermon. It would just chew their heart up because they're full of evil thoughts. They know it and they would be reproved and convicted and they don't want to be. They like what they're doing. So young people don't learn to be that kind of person. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 5 tells us that we must bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Now there's a mouthful for you. Hard to do. You have to learn to control your thoughts. Another thing we have to control is our flesh. For young people, that's what we'd call hormones. I know when Kevin was about 7 or 8, 9 years old, he started growing a little more hair in his arms. He walked up to Emily and said, Mom, I've got hormones. Well, he had the right idea. But hormones are an issue in life, and that's what he's talking about in the Bible. When we talk about young people, learn to control your hormones, your flesh, your carnal desires, because they are so powerful. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22, it says, flee also youthful lusts. I specifically remember it about the age of 14 thinking, what is that? Because when you're young, all lusts are youthful. It's So you don't know, I'm thinking, well, what's the old folks have to lust about? What is it they've got to worry about? And what is it I got to worry about more than they've got to worry about? It doesn't take long to figure that one out, but at the time you're not sure. It's like, well, but I can tell you now as an older person, I was right. And the Bible says, flee youthful lust. And 1 Corinthians 6:18 says, flee fornication. That's one of those youthful lusts. In fact, it's interesting, Robertson in his dictionary says, these are the lusts peculiar to flaming youth. God made us that way on purpose, and so these hormones, these desires, are very strong in young people. And that's the way it was intended by God, so that the young boys be attracted to young girls and vice versa. That's pretty normal, but you've got to learn to control those, not let them control you. And the reason why is because it can become your slave master if you don't watch out. I've said before, and I'll say it again if you'll listen, that there's walls, moral barriers in your mind. There's certain things you would never do. For example, you'd never pick up a gun and shoot and kill a human being, would you? But if, for example, you went to the military and had to shoot an enemy, all of a sudden that barrier's down. You've done it before, you can do it again. That can be a dangerous thing because that wall might need to have come down for the soldier. He was required to do that in his job. But now he has the danger also of killing an innocent person by accident because that wall is not there anymore. Young people, once you've had sexual relationships outside of marriage, what's to keep you from doing it again and again and again? What's to keep you from doing it when you get married because you've already broken that wall down? There's not much difference between fornication and adultery except your obligation to your spouse. And so if you never commit that act, then you never have to worry about that wall being knocked down. That's something you said, I've never done that. I'm never going to. God says it's wrong. He says, flee youthful lust. You know that word flee, I could give you a lot of good Greek definitions for the word, but what the word really means in its easiest form is run for your lives. That's what it means. Somebody says, well, how do you mean? Well, in Matthew 24 and verse 16, when Jesus is telling the disciples, the apostles, when you see the city of Jerusalem surrounded by the Roman soldiers, flee to the mountains. Now, do you think he meant, well, the city's about to be destroyed, so you guys take your good old time, and when it gets convenient, just kind of lollygag those mountains. No, he means you take off and run as fast as you can go, because if you don't, you might die in the city. And another example is when the Roman soldiers came to arrest Jesus Christ. And now their lives are in danger too, and they feel threatened. And so it says all the disciples forsook Jesus and fled. Same word. So when I say the word flee means run as fast as you can the other way, that's exactly what it means. And a good example of that is Genesis 39 and Joseph, when Potiphar's wife wanted to have a relationship with him, what did he do? He said, I cannot commit this sin against God or my master. But she was persistent, and so he ran. She grabbed him by the robe, and he forsook the robe and fled. That's the only way he's going to get out of that situation. And young people, this passion is so strong and so powerful when you're young, that's the only way you're going to avoid that particular sin and crime. And so the word is in the present active imperative mood. In other words, take it very seriously. Psalm 119 and verse 9 says, how could a young man cleanse his ways by paying attention to God's word? And Proverbs 6:27 and 28 says, can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? And the answer is no. But do you know what that's illustrating? The very next verse says, nor can a man go into his neighbor's wife and be held innocent. It may sound like a great plan, but think about all the bad things that come with that. Look at David in his life when he and Bathsheba committed adultery. And if you go read the rest of the story, you'll see that from that time until David died, he had so many consequences to his action. At the time, he never dreamed those things would come to pass. But somehow sin can deceive your mind and tempt you into thinking, well, it's okay. It doesn't matter. Or I don't care. Or I'm not going to worry about tomorrow. But then when tomorrow comes, you have to worry about him anyway because these consequences come upon you whether you like them or not. And so Satan tries to influence young people to do the exact opposite of what God instructs. And if you think I'm kidding, just think about some examples. Sorority parties. Beach parties on spring break. You ever seen some of those on TV? It's unbelievable what most people are doing. A lot of the things I can't even mention in public. Drinking bouts. Orgies at school fraternities. Those are just a few examples of some of the terrible things that go on, and they go on every single year. That's what young people have to decide about when they go to college and go away from home. Am I going to be a part of this scene or not? And everybody says, that's what young people do. But we'll talk about that again in a moment as well. Just remember, you play around with fire, you will be burned. And then the next thing we need to realize to control is, learn to say no. As we say, well, everybody's doing it, and my friends are trying to get me to do it, and I don't want to be a weirdo or different. I don't want to be odd. Peer pressure can cause us to do things we really don't want to do. But we're afraid to say no for fear of what people think of us. And I know, because I had a couple of times in high school where I was invited to parties that I couldn't go to, and it was amazing that on Friday night when I wasn't at that party, Monday morning, you'd think I had leprosy. And from that day till I left high school, I was never viewed as the same person again. It's amazing. And I didn't regret my choice. I listened to my buddies on Monday morning talk about how much fun it was to go out and get drunk on Friday night. And I said, really, what did I miss out on? He said, well, this one fellow, I won't call his name, his mom might be listening to this sermon. He got drunk and he had to throw up. So we pulled over the side of the road. He stepped out of the car to throw up. He didn't realize that there was a ditch there and he went rolling down the bottom of the ditch. Ha, ha, ha. I thought, boy, I sure am missing out on a lot. I could have killed myself and didn't even know it. Not to say I didn't do some things I shouldn't have. We did go take water balloons and throw them at parked cars. It was kind of fun. But you know what? You got to learn to say no to the bad things. Even if people think you're different. Even if people think you're a little freaky. Because you know, really, that's what Christians are supposed to do. Whether you're young or old, we're supposed to be different to some degree, not on purpose, but in making the right choices. Remember what Paul said in Philippians chapter 2, that you may be blameless and harmless sons of God in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights. What the world calls weird, God calls a moral light. So you be a light. And I hope you can learn to do as I did, and that is don't care what other people think about you. I was always comfortable enough in my own skin to think you're not going to try to pressure me to do something I know is wrong. I don't stoop to your level because you can go off and have fun if you want to. You can think I'm strange if you want to. But I'm going to do what I think is right and what I want to do because I'm in control of my life. I don't want to be a slave to the peers around me who think I should do this, that, or something else. So you should feel the same way. So dare to be different. Dare to be good. Dare to have moral character. That's what it really is all about. We have some great examples I've already mentioned of Joseph. Daniel, who would not eat the king's delicacies. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who said, we will not bow down and worship your God even if it kills us. Those were young people who had to make those decisions. And so it shows you that young people make choices. I pray to God you'll make good ones. You'll make them on purpose. You'll make it with forethought and planning. Another thing you have to learn to control is your tongue. But I say to you, Matthew 12:36, that for every idle word men may speak, they shall give an account of it in judgment. That will give you chills. Everything I say, the only thing God will forget are the things you repented of and had the blood of Christ wash away. We've all said things we shouldn't have said. Sometimes they come back to haunt us now, but they certainly will in the judgment day if we don't learn to control that. I love the words of David in Psalm chapter 141 and verse 3. Because you can't hardly control your tongue by yourself, can you? Need a little bit of help. There it says, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. So David prayed and said, God, help me control my tongue. Put a door in front of my mouth so that when I say something stupid, it stops right there. Wouldn't that be nice? Talking to a friend, all of a sudden these doors come out. What was that? The Lord help me. For by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you'll be condemned. Okay, now, lesson number one, you will receive the harvest of sowing wild oats, so don't do that. Number two, learn to control yourself in all those ways we mentioned. Number three, rally around good friends. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, evil associations corrupt good morals. Duh. Parents always want to know where who your friends are and where they're going. Parents aren't as dumb as you think. They know that your friends will be a large influence on you for good or bad. Exodus 23 and verse 2 says, you shall not follow a crowd to do evil. God knows that you get in a crowd of people, you're liable to do the wrong thing if that's the wrong crowd. The Psalm 1:1, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Why is that? Because that's the wrong crowd. That's the wrong company. It corrupts people, because if you get to thinking everybody's like this, you're going to start acting that way whether you want to or not, because you don't want to be different. God says, blessed is the man who doesn't do those things, and so you have to make that choice. Look at Proverbs chapter 1, verses 10 through 18. Because again, this is advice to young people especially. And how many people in our prisons or in the graves could have used this advice before it happened to them? My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. You think that's going on now? You ever hear about break-ins, home invasions, we call it? A lot of times that's young people taking this advice right here. But here Solomon says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Well, it's bad to kill people to get their stuff, isn't it? But that's not the whole story. Read on. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for, are you reading it? Their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner. You want to rob and murder to get? Oh, you'll get away with it for a little bit, but pretty soon your life is going to be required. And then it won't be worth it. So how many young people said, well, it's easy to sell drugs on the street, and I can make a lot of money. And besides, this guy over here did it, and he's got all this bling and all this jewelry and all these nice cars, and he's got girls, and what more could you want? So he does it and gets killed. It's exactly what Proverbs 1 is saying don't do. It's on a lesser level. It's true in every respect. Pick good friends. Number four, radiate a good influence. Matthew 5:16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify the Father in heaven. That's not just for us old folk. That's for everybody. Young people, be a good example. Number two, Philippians 2:15, be blameless and harmless children of God without fault in this wicked and crooked world we live in. Nothing's different today than it was 2,000 years ago or 2,000 before that. The only thing that's changed are the names of the designer clothes, the vehicles we drive. But people and their characteristics and their choices and their attitudes are all the same. Solomon said that in Ecclesiastes. There's nothing new under the sun. Just like the sun comes up in the east and sets in the west, so people grow up, and as young people, they think they're the first ones on the scene that have ever thought about going out and sowing wild oats. Wow, we're going to be different. No, you're not. You're like everybody's ever come along before. You want to be really different, be a Christian. be harmless and blameless and a good example. And people will say, that person is strange, but I like him. How many of you people know who Jordan Spieth is? If you do, raise your hand. Not many. Well, he's the latest golfing phenom. If you folks don't know, I like golf. And, of course, in the last 20 years, Tiger Woods was the face and the voice and the image of golf. But now, young Jordan Spieth has come along seemingly out of nowhere. And he's won the last two majors. He's in contention today for a third major. Just barely missed winning the British Open. Had he won those four majors, he would have been the first person ever to have won four major golf tournaments in the same year. If he wins today, he'll be the only one since Tiger Woods and a previous golfer of ages gone by, Ben Hogan, who've won all three majors in the same year under a certain age. He's an old man now. He just turned 22 the other day. But let me. The thing that's great about him is not how good a golfer is. I watched him about a year and a half ago, the first time I saw him, and immediately watching him be interviewed, I thought, there's a special young man. I'd never seen him play golf. I listened to his interview. I said, wow, that guy's sharp. And everybody that's interviewed him said the same thing. Let me give an example. Here's the New York Daily Times back in April when he was in contention for the Masters. And said, there's much to like about the halfway leader at the Masters, Jordan Spieth, who's 21 years old, yet more mature somehow than the stately pine trees of the Augusta National. And he talks about the character of the young man. And it's interesting. What I want to point out is the choices he makes in life. It says he's kind of old-fashioned. He still dates his high school sweetheart, Annie Verrett, a sharp business graduate from Texas Tech. Whenever Spieth speaks so fondly to his sister Ellie, it is hard not to root for him even harder. Ellie was born prematurely, fought for her life, has been diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Spieth will talk to you about her as long as you want. He will tell you that his sister is obsessed with tractors, that she loves trinkets and always wants to go on a shopping spree with him when he returns home from another tournament. She's the funniest member of our family, he said Friday. I really love when she's able to be out there, love spending time with her. It's humbling to see her and her friends and the struggles they go through each day that we take for granted. But at the same time, they are the happiest people in the world. When I say they, I speak to special needs kids. Spieth seems comfortable in any surrounding with anyone. He's a fine representative in a long line of Texas golfers. Then the interesting thing is, he was told by several that he was a humble man. So I said, Mr. Spieth, would you explain to us where you learned about your humility? His answer was, I don't like talking about my humility because then I'm not humble. But they asked him again and again, and finally yesterday I heard him on TV make this comment. He said, well, my parents taught me to be humble. He said, my sister keeps me humble. And he said, humble means you don't talk about yourself. You go out and let your actions speak for you. We're talking about a fellow who just turned 22, who, because of his skill as a golfer, has made millions of dollars already, and by the way, bought a $7 million house in Dallas, Texas this year. And he probably paid cash for it. But when you listen to him talk, and if you don't know who he is, get online and listen to him. A young man with tons of character. And a fellow who makes wise decisions at such a young age. And even the media has noticed and said, how mature is this fella at 21, now 22? So that's the point I'm making. You know what he does? He also said in this report, whenever you ask him a question, he does not dodge reporters. But when you ask him a question, he stops and thinks about it before he answers. Mature way beyond his years. And that's why I like Jordan Spieth. The only flaw I've seen so far is he roots for the Longhorns. Who wants to do that? So young people, you can be like that. And if you find friends like that, you'll have a good life. Number five, find your place in the church. Have we failed to use the young people enough? You sometimes say, well, young people just aren't interested. Well, we don't let them be interested. We don't give them the opportunity to teach and lead singing enough. to make talks or sermons. And so let's encourage them to do more of that, because they sure can. And they just need our encouragement. They can fulfill all the responsibilities that you and I can. And so I encourage young people, don't sit back and just watch. Don't wait for somebody to ask you to do something. Walk up to the elders and say, I'd like to do this. I think I can. Would you give me the opportunity? And they will. If you need encouragement from me, let me know. I'll do everything I can to help and encourage you. I might scare you to death doing so, but all you have to do is learn to say no. And finally, choose a marriage partner wisely. I say finally, that's just the last point in this lesson. There could be a lot more said. But there's only one thing you need to know about this decision here. And that's one question, young people, you ask before you marry anybody. I don't care if he makes $7 million a year and is famous. Here's the question you ask before you get married to anybody. You ready? You already know the question, don't you? What is it? Will this person help me get to heaven? If the answer is yes, then go ahead and marry him. If the answer is no, then run for your life. Because that will be the one decision you make as a young person that will affect your spiritual destiny more than anything else. And those who have made bad choices can say, I know what you're talking about. Those who have made good choices and have a happy marriage and live a good long life together, especially serving the Lord, there's not a greater joy than sitting beside your spouse in church while the preacher's preaching, especially if he goes over a little while. Because wives, you can nudge your husband and say, wake up, he's almost done. It's kind of sad to be sitting there by yourself when you could have your mate there with you. But it's all about this. And so I'll just say enough said about that. But consider the grave consequences and the dangers that attend a bad marriage. And think about your choices. Always do your best. What you plant now, you will harvest later. I trust the young people take what I've said to heart and not think that I'm just preaching to you because that's what I'm supposed to do. What I'm really saying is these are the choices I made when I was your age. And I can tell you after several decades of having lived that life, I don't regret any of those decisions. The decisions I regret are the bad ones I made. But the major decisions that I've talked about this morning are the ones I've tried to the best of my ability to do, and I'll encourage you to do them as well. The reason really that I want you to do it is because God said so. Trust Him and His Word. As an 18-year-old, you're not going to be able to see that far down the road. But trust in God and do what He says, and then when you're older, you'll look back and say, yep, He was right. And I'm glad that I made those choices. I want you to have a happy life. I want you to be fulfilled. I want you to be the best you can be in your life. And that can only be done by serving God to the best of your ability. So today, if you haven't obeyed the gospel, won't you become a Christian? As a twig grows, so grows the tree. Well, if you obey the gospel in your youth, it'll be so much easier for you 10, 15, 20 years down the line. That's what all of us want for you. We have a lot of good young people to be examples with. If you need a list of names after services, let me know. I'll give them to you. And some of your parents need to get some of your kids with some good examples, good Christian influences, because they need that. Young people need each other. It's fun to hang out together, and you'd be surprised how much fun you can have as a group of Christians. It's fun. You know why? Because that's what I used to do. We had a blast, but we never got drunk. We never took drugs. We never did things we shouldn't. We still had a wonderful time. And I can tell you about all those things we did if you want to listen to it, because I'm not ashamed of any of it. Can you say that? If you make the right choice, you can. Be a Christian now while we stand and sing.